So today is April the 1st, 2014, and we're at UAF Library with Elizabeth Baker. Thank you for coming. And Robin Russell, Oral History Collection Manager, and myself, Leslie McCartney. So Elizabeth, thank you again for donating this wonderful collection of interviews that you did in the 1999 time. And what we wanted to do in this interview is we just wanted to frame this entire collection for you to tell us your story and how this collection came to be so that researchers in future will have an understanding of what the actual whole corpus of the collection is.
Okay.
So maybe we can start with you introducing yourself and your parents and when and where you were born, and we'll go from there.
Okay, and thank you for accepting the collection and doing all the work that you've done for it. Well, I was born in 1943 in Seattle, but just to step back just a little bit from there, there was a small Assemblies of God Bible College. Actually, at that time, they called it an institute, Northwest Bible Institute. And today, as I drive down north on I-5 and get kind of in the Green Lake area, over on the right, I pass a brick church with a kind of a dome top and a cross, one of those, oh, I forget the name of it now, but, you know, the lighted, the old-fashioned kind of lighted. And in the middle of I-5 is where that little school was. Ah. And that is where my parents met. And they attended there in the late 30s and early 40s. Okay, so they married, and even while they were dating, they were trying to start a little church in the Boeing area, South Seattle. And they would clean up a bar to have services on Sunday. And actually, I think they said they actually lived upstairs after they married and brought me, you know, up there. Anyway, so that was the beginnings. My dad became, their names, Arvin W. Glandon, and my mother was Luana M. Hurd, and then married Glandon.
And is that H-U-R-D or
H-U-R-D, and she grew up in Mukilteo. That's where, if people are familiar, they take the ferry to Whidbey Island.
How do you spell your mom's name? Her first
L-U-A-N-A. Luana.
Luana.
Okay. And so what was their actual worker career, or were they already missionaries, or did
no.
they have other careers?
No. She went right from high school to that little, and her voice teacher was very unhappy for her going to that little school because she thought she ought to go, you know, for opera or something. And my dad's family had moved to the Northwest from Colorado. And he just was always involved in church, at least from late teens. And so that brought them to the Northwest, and then that's that closest little school that he attended. Okay, so his career, was a Bible teacher. And New Testament Greek. So the first, besides little small little churches that they pastored and teaching, we went to Texas, Waxahachie, Texas, for 6 years, 1947, I believe, to 54. That was my grade school years. And that's where he taught, you know, the New Testament Greek and Bible classes and all. So now I guess we have to kind of get to the Alaska connection.
That's okay. I'm sure. Was he actually placed in these various churches then, or was this a personal choice to go to certain churches to work?
Well, I think he knew somebody in Texas, and then, of course, they, whoever, they told about him, and he was invited down there.
Okay.
He had taught in a small school in Portland, associated with the church there. But so anyway, now he's at the a higher level, you know. In 1951, he and another family drove from Texas to Alaska. And I don't really know why, but I guess it's because you know, the war was over and the road was open.
Right, right.
And they ended up in Seward. And so got jobs there for the summer. Mm-hmm. And then went back to Texas. And then in 1953, they did it again.
Whoa.
But that they took so many slides of their trip and their camping and all, and then, of course, showed them over and over and over. Mm-hmm. And I just have to insert this. They were showing them at somebody's house, and a student by the name of John Kowalski, who had already been to Alaska in the 30s,
oh my goodness,
was a student there.
Huh.
And he invited a young lady to accompany him, who was in music, and they'd gone on some kind of a missions trip, or anyway, her husband was killed in an accident.
Oh.
She survived. But anyway, this night, John invited her to go with him to see the Glandon Slides of Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, so later, we're going to see him and them all in Alaska.
Okay.
And they became lifelong missionaries.
Uh-huh.
And today, she has passed away, but today he's still living in Wasilla.
Wow. Oh, my God.
So his story is one of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, let's see. There were so many at that time coming to, like, one of those first trips. I think Ruth Anderson was a student down there.
Mm-hmm.
She was up early on. She eventually started a small church in Talkeetna. She was a teacher and retired as a mm-hmm. teacher here in Alaska. Let's see. You better stop and let me think.
That's okay.
That's okay.
Or maybe I look at my notes, huh?
Sure,
get an idea.
Sure.
Okay. Okay. On one of the return trips from Alaska, Ken and Velma Garrison, they were also students in Southwestern.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually rode together on the return trip. My sister and I stayed with our relatives in the Northwest while my folks were in Alaska. And then they picked us up on the way back. And Ken and Velma Garrison were on that one trip. I think Ken was actually in politics here in the Fairbanks area at one period.
Mm-hmm.
But for UConn, he was the manager of the Northern Commercial Company store.
Oh, really?
And so, I don't know how we're going to go in sequence here, but at one point, let's say 59-60, my parents were in Fort Yukon teaching public school. Ken and Velma Garrison were the managers of the Northern Commercial Company. The Kowalskis were the pastor of the Assemblies of God Church of Fort Yukon.
Oh, really?
And another name that is recorded are the Andresses, Ken and Ethel Andress.
Mm-hmm.
And they spent their whole life in Alaska, basically, pastoring small churches. He was a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And they were also there that year. So whole group that actually came from Texas, or no, Ken and Ethel didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so that was there.
Oh, my goodness. Now, is it very typical for Assembly of God missionaries to have other jobs on the side?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they need support, they have to live.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, subsistence hunting, or my dad wasn't a hunter, but others would, Ken Garrison,
mm-hmm.
and others would fish and give to them. So I guess you need to know how the whole family came to Alaska.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, well, after the 6 years in Texas, my father was invited to teach at Northwest Bible, and I don't know if it was called Still Institute, the same one where they had attended in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And so he taught there for 3 years. Now, when my mother had been a student there, she had a very good friend, Lillian Lorraine Lethesori, I believe. But while they, you know, college age, she married a man named Alvin Kapener. And they ended up spending most of their lives, in fact, they did. They're buried here in Alaska. Okay, so my mother and Lillian were good friends.
Mm-hmm.
So the Kapeners had gone to Alaska already, and this is now, We're talking 57 and mm-hmm. before. Mm-hmm. Alvin Kapener was a church builder. And I don't know the sequence, but he built a church in Nome and in Point Hope, Barrow, Wainwright, Cocktovic, Barter Island. Mm-hmm. And so over the many years, besides building the spiritual church, the people, right. You know.
Now, when you say church builder, you mean like carpenter?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. He built them from scratch. He was very, you know, he would put up like windmills to do something, right? Create some kind of power. You can tell. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, they had indoor plumbing in Barrow, but it was, I think, gravity fed or.
Oh, wow.
You know, I mean, the water.
Right.
I don't know. I can't go in that area. Okay. But so we are now in Seattle. My dad's mm-hmm. teaching at this Bible school. We kept getting these fat letters from Lorraine Kapener from Barrow.
Mm-hmm.
And she started saying, why don't you come to Barrow and teach public school and help us at the church?
Ah.
Well, in 1957, so my folks considered that mm-hmm. and applied to Juneau. And at the time, I guess there wasn't an opening.
Mm.
And this is interesting. One day in August of 1957, my mother had a job, but this day she felt just some reason she should not go to work. And so she stayed home. She received a call from Juneau, and they said, are you still interested in that teaching job in Barrow? Yes.
Ooh.
When can you get here?
Yeah.
So that began our family adventure in Alaska.
Oh, my
and my God. First flight.
I was going to say, how old were you and...
my sister. I have a sister, Gwendolyn. Mm-hmm. Okay, she was going into fifth grade, and I was going into ninth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And that September, I turned 14, my 14th mm-hmm. birthday in Barrow.
Mm-hmm.
So we came to Barrow, and my mother and dad taught school. My sister went to school. There was no high school. So I did high school by correspondence from the University of Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 years. So mm-hmm. we didn't leave for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now we're in Alaska.
What was your first impressions of Barrow when you arrived?
Well, we loved it. I mean, we loved our whole experience there. The Eskimos were so friendly. It was a time when every home had a team of 9 dogs. You know, so I got to get dog sled rides out to hunting camps. And so it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. Because we were teachers, we had the advantage of having the custodians.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a custodian with a white snow shirt, you know, covering his parka, that would chip ice into the water barrel and so our drinking water.
Oh, wow.
We had another man with a black snow shirt that would come up and carry the honey bucket.
Ooh.
And at that time, there were barrels all over, you know, like fences and just all over. And I understand that they took the honey buckets and put them out on the ice, and they went out to sea.
Ah.
Okay. Of course, now they have butylidors, and everything has changed. It was a different world. But we loved it. Yeah, okay. So we're in Barrow. And the Kapeners were there in good fellowship. They were there that whole winter, and then they left in the summer. They had 2 children.
Mm-hmm.
Regner was the oldest one, I think about a year older than I, and their son Howard. So, okay, they left the next summer, and a new family came in, Paul and Marguerite Bills.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bills, now I don't know the time frame, but at one point they were pastoring in Beaver
mm-hmm.
And North Pole. Anyway, they came to Barrow that year to mm-hmm. pastor the church with the 2 adopted little Eskimo girls. And Mopsy and Peter, we call them. So that was a wonderful time. And just to insert another name, Oh, Paul Bills wrote a book, and so that's on my book list.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells about their experiences in Barrow, and he is actually buried in Barrow.
Oh, really?
Yes. There's Paul Pakatuk was a gentleman, beautiful white hair. When I was there, I can remember him standing up in church for a testimony time,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, being so thankful for God and in his life, and that he had known him personally for 40 years, and that's when I was there.
Uh-huh.
And he had prayed for his people for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, another interview is by Agnes Rodley.
Right.
And she was a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And so she eventually wrote up Paul Pakatuk's story, mm-hmm. and it's called Alone in My Kayak. He was put in the snow as a baby because I think it was a time of starvation. You know, the family just couldn't, and somebody rescued him.
Mm.
And he eventually, the story is, he made his way later in life by catching, trapping foxes, selling them, and getting a passage out to Seattle. And it was in Seattle. I think it was Seattle or Portland that he heard the gospel of Jesus Christ, and his life was changed. He went back to his people, and he prayed all those years. Well, when we were there in 58, I think it was January of 59, there was an evangelist that came to Barrow, Oscar and Gladys Butterfield, and we had tremendous services at the church.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was amazing. The people, then after church was over, they would have testimony time, you know, sharing their own experiences. And there was reel-to-reel recorders at that time, and they would set up a whole line along the front of the church with recording their testimonies and stories, and then sending them to the other villages, Wainwright, and up and down the coast. Anyway, so it was a wonderful time of what we call revival.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Bills talks about that in his book.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, some of Paul Pakatuk's children came to a personal relationship with Jesus.
Yeah.
And so it was just awesome. And I was so thrilled to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then
Elizabeth, in Barrow at that time, was there other churches also?
Yes, there's the Presbyterian Church.
Right.
And the Presbyterian Church had been there for years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, and I think there was a very small Catholic church, mm-hmm. but it seemed like the Presbyterian was the main church, and that, so mm-hmm. that would have been the history of mm-hmm. a lot of the people.
Mm-hmm.
My father, the Wartees were there when we were there,
mm-hmm.
and also then the John Chambers at mm-hmm. the Presbyterian. And through John Chambers encouraging my father to go to Princeton Seminary.
Oh, really?
Yes. So that happened. That happened a couple years later. But so yes, we have.
So the relations between the churches was
yeah.
Good.
Well. Of course, you know, some were coming to ours that were used to going to there, and so I don't really know the insides of that. I was a teenager, remember?
Yeah.
I was playing games, and actually, Regner, I had my first paying job.
Really?
Regner Kapener and I mopped the Hobson Igloo Grill after it closed at night. So I have a picture that when we came to Alaska, we thought the prices were outlandish and horrible.
Mm-hmm.
You look at them, I mean, look at those prices on that chalkboard now, and that was cheap. But anyway, one of the men that was really touched during that revival time was an older man, Ned Nusanginya. Eskimo man who had driven the mail across the Arctic coast.
Oh, wow.
He eventually became the first Assemblies of God ordained Eskimo preacher.
Wow. Wow.
And pastored for years, some years, you know, like I think Point Hope, Wainwright, Koktovik, those kind of villages. And my parents, when we get into that part of the story anyway, so he actually stayed in their homes with them, my mother and my dad, when they did the Bible teaching. But it was at this time that my dad got the burden or the vision for training. I mean, here are these new converts, and that they need, and his burden was to train the native people. I mean, why keep bringing up these outside people? He wanted the locals to know the Bible and to be able to teach the Bible, whether they were the Sunday school teachers or just leaders in the community. So this is where that burden started in him. The next year, it would be 59-60 year, we left Barrow, and my parents went to Fort Yukon with my sister. But because I had already been 2 years correspondence, basically home alone, so I stayed in Fairbanks at the Little Assembly of God Church with the pastor's family.
Now, is that the one that's over there on the airport road there?
Well, it was the beginnings of that one.
Oh.
It was at that time 333 3rd Street, which is right across from the Golden Towers. And it's a parking lot now. But in 1963, that building was moved to Nenana in the winter and somehow skidded across the ice. And so it was in downtown Nenana for several years. Eventually, it was torn down, and they built an Assembly of God church on the highway in Nenana. But anyway, that's what happened to that church. But that's where my husband and I met. And Little Log, it was a beautiful church, Log. And I lived upstairs with the B.P. Wilsons, who were the pastors. Now, B.P. Wilson was a pilot, too. And he kind of was the overseer for the missionaries in the remote villages. And so I was living there right in the middle of all this coming and going.
Oh my gosh.
Whether the people were coming from, you know, wherever they were coming from, I was getting to meet them. The ones that we had known in Fort, I had mentioned about Fort Yukon and North Pole and wherever. Okay, so that was a wonderful year for me, living with the B.P. Wilsons. And
so you were sort of living in Missionary Central at that point.
Yes.
And going to school in Fairbanks.
And I was attending Lathrop High School.
Oh, my goodness.
And I walked. I walked from, you know, 3rd Avenue to Lathrop. And those were the days girls wore skirts. And it got to be like 50 below zero. And I should have known better. I could have worn pants and then taken them off when I got to school. But I walked this one day. But I learned my lesson because my legs were so cold when it was 50 below. By the time I got to school, I don't think they warmed up till noon. But I learned a lesson. So anyway, that was...
And so did a lot of the missionaries from the communities then come into town quite often? And was this just for meetings or?
Well, whether they had to shop or maybe doctors or I don't know what all the reasons coming and going. And the Wilsons and Ruby Wilson was so hospitable. Just, you know, add water to the soup. Everybody was welcome. later, after that church was moved, and they built a house in the Aurora subdivision. You know, that was still Grand Central Station, and Phillips Field was the small airport at the time. She could wake up in the morning and somebody'd be in their guest room, but she didn't even know it. it was that kind of a life. And I think I learned a lot of things from her. I like that to this day, because after we retired from teaching, we started a bed and breakfast, so. So, anyway, let's see. Now, where shall I get back to?
Okay, so you were attending Lathrop High School in Fairbanks.
Yes.
Your parents were in Fort Yukon.
Okay, thank you. Okay, yes. That was just 1 year. Mm-hmm. And then the next year is the year, that's a 59-60. The next year is the year my dad went to Princeton.
Ah.
And he became a teaching fellow.
Mm.
And with, I think, Greek.
Mm-hmm.
But he also got an advance, another degree. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it was. Didn't matter where we were, he was always taking classes.
Mm-hmm.
And so he taught, or whatever a teaching fellow is. I was, by this time, a senior in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I attended Hamilton High West, Trenton, New Jersey, and that's where I graduated.
Oh.
And so that was also a very good year.
I was about to ask, how did you and your sister feel about moving from school to school and place to place?
You know, I did not have any problem. I loved it. And
yeah.
I had actually gotten a little bit behind in my school, and mm-hmm. I was not going to be, I lacked U.S. history, and I remember catching up under the maple tree in New Jersey so I could be a senior on time. So I did that, and I that all worked out. Now, my sister has another entirely different story by living in the village, and mm-hmm. especially Fort Yukon.
Mm-hmm.
So it had an effect on her, and mm-hmm. I guess she would have to tell her own story.
Mm-hmm.
But so, you know, we reacted in different ways.
So how long were your parents in Fort Yukon for then?
Well, just that 1 year.
Just that 1 year.
Wait, okay. But then we went to New Jersey, and then they went back to Fort Yukon, and I went to college, and I started out at Northwest Bible. I think by then it was a college.
Uh-huh.
Today it's a university. But,
oh, wow.
Of course, I-5 is going through the property where it was, so it's now on a beautiful campus in Kirkland, Washington,
uh-huh.
Northwest University, and that's where I attended for 2 years. Okay, but I told you that my father then had this burden now to teach the natives mm-hmm. systematic Bible study. So after the 1 year in New Jersey, they went back to Fort Yukon.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe this time it was not teaching public school, but it was the pastor of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister was still with them.
Mm-hmm.
So those couple years there, she was with them going to the school, local school. And my dad was pastoring. But he started trying out his ideas mm-hmm. for the in-depth Bible study. And would have, you know, like a week at a time, 2 hours a night,
mm-hmm.
And two courses, so he could be systematic
right.
in his studies. And I think it was 1962, the Assemblies of God would all get together for a conference, you know, mm-hmm. someplace. And they did this, I think it was here in Fairbanks. And they authorized him to go mm-hmm. ahead and start this itinerant school.
Hmm.
And he also had gone to Stevens Village
mm-hmm.
and had a 2 week, 2 hour a night,
mm-hmm.
and two different classes. So mm-hmm. Anyway, and that worked out really great. And I'd mentioned did I mention Don and Jen Nelson?
No.
Don and Jen Nelson?
No.
Okay, well, they were, at this time, I was living with Wilsons. They were coming in and out.
Right.
And he was also a pilot.
Right. Now, these are the folks that started KJMP
yes.
in North Pole.
Yes,
right.
They yeah. started KJMP. Okay, so, and while I'm in college now, I'm coming back to Alaska for the summers, but I'm traveling with Don and Jen Nelson.
Really?
Their airplane, they took us and planned Vacation Bible School for the children in the villages. So those two summers, I went with Don and Jen, and then we would have a couple other girls for mm-hmm. 1 year, their daughter Judy, and there's some others at different years. But we held Vacation Bible School in Fort Yukon, Beaver, Chalkitsik. Did I say
Stevens Village?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Vinatai?
Oscar. Oh, my gosh.
1 week or 2 week Bible? Do you remember?
Oh, goodness.
I remember I used to go there. Were 2 weeks always.
Oh, did you?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember.
Okay.
Yeah, details I'm not remembering too well. Mm-hmm. But that was all wonderful. And John played the guitar, and people would gather at night to sing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was wonderful. And Jen was great, you know, had to figure out what to feed us.
Yeah.
And spam was the meat of choice,
oh.
I think, unless some... Anyway, she did a good job.
Now, would you use supplies that were in the village, or did you have to bring everything in with you?
Had to bring everything in.
Wow.
I think churches that they were associated, they were not actually members of the Assemblies of God. They were with an organization called, I forgot it already, out of Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
See, Don had been, in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
He was a prisoner of war for 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
He tells his story in the book, Shadows on the Arctic Snow.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a drunk. And I think his wife was on the verge of divorcing him after the war and all that time. And he went to a meeting in what's called Souls Harbor in Minneapolis.
Mm.
And God changed his life.
Mm.
And he was no longer an alcoholic.
And
anyway, I think he worked on the Alaska at some point. But anyway, he was called to Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, his first years were at Stevens Village.
Mm-hmm.
I traveled with them. And then, I went to college for 2 years. Let's see, well, that would have been 61, 62, 62, 63. And now my folks had started this itinerant.
Right.
Okay, they started traveling around. Well, my sister, by this time, was still in high school, like her senior year or something. And they had, the Wilsons had moved on Aurora, southern on Aurora. And my folks had a little 8x25-foot trailer kind of next door. My sister was in there, and that was be there where they'd come and go to as they traveled to the villages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just felt, and it had been my dream to go to the Bible college where I felt like it was... I just felt like I should transfer to the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm.
And live with my sister, you know. So she was next door to these, wonderful friends. But so we lived together that year. Okay, that's the year Don and Jen Nelson are in and out, and they're getting their vision for the station.
Right.
Mm.
And so I got to get in on a lot of that excitement too. I think one of the local radio stations they had a program.
Right.
Of the country gospel, country western that went to the villages, and you know that worked so well. Anyway, so now what am I saying? Okay, so now I'm back in Fairbanks, and this is when my husband and I actually started dating seriously, and got married in September of 1964. And I was because I transferred from a Bible school basically to the university. I lost some credits, which was fine, but I was so thankful. They gave me my New Testament Greek and Bible geography, I was very thankful for, for what they did. I was a year behind, and but we got married, and I still had, 2 or 3 years? Anyway, so...
And so your parents at this time, you say they're living this itinerant life, so a couple of weeks in every village... And how many students would your dad have in each village? Do you have any sense?
Oh, sometimes it depends on where it was. Mm-hmm. You know, they might have 5 or 6, or they might have, could be 15. This is kind of their itinerary. They spent time in Barrow, Point Hope, Nome, Wainwright, Coctovic, Barter Island. an Alaska, Minto, Angoon was a great, wonderful place there. Oh, that brings up somebody else that's in the collection. Okay, this is another reason why. Okay, so you're starting to see the interconnection of a lot of the people that I had known. Okay, then when my dad and mother are traveling, village to village to village, 2 weeks at a time, their route. Then to raise support, you know, this is costs money and you have to have it. And Ween was great. Ween Airlines, they gave a clergy fare, 50% off.
Wow.
So that really helped. And then like Ken Adnerus, I mentioned, a pilot, he would take them some places. But they also had to do what we call itineration, where they would go around in the states, lower 48 states, they would go around to two different churches telling about their ministry to raise support. Okay, in one place, some little small place in Washington State, I believe it was, they went to some small church and is fellowshipping with the pastor and all. And then my dad just said to him, "Why didn't you come to Alaska?" And of course, the wife said, "No." But anyway, it worked out that this was Roland and Iola Peretti.
Ah.
And they're one of the ones that.
Right.
Okay. And so, yes, they came, and they were also in Angoon for many years. And they so then they experienced the benefit of, and my dad called it Far North Bible School, the traveling itinerant school. And they, so they were there. And then I believe from Angoon, they came to North Pole. I'm not sure of the sequence of their own story. But eventually, Roland Peretti became what we call the superintendent of the Assemblies of God of Alaska. So he was eventually, you know, kind of pastor of all the pastors. Based in Anchorage. So my dad did it for about 13 years, the itinerant school. And then Ween cut off the 50%. That was a big blow. And right about the same time, my dad got an invitation to teach at the Assemblies of God College in Lakeland, Florida. So they moved to Florida for 9 years. And that, the Andruses had, the ones from Fort Yukon had mentioned the pilot. He also had a bird for this Bible school business, but his was more for a resident school. And so he kind of got one started in Bethel. And then my dad was hoping to come to Bethel in the summers, you know, and teach there. Well, that school eventually moved to Anchorage and became, over the years, they kept the name Far. Well, at first it was Bethel Bible Training, and then it went to Anchorage, and they changed name back to the Far North Bible, and eventually it was college. Okay. No, where am I? So anyway, that was the Andruses, and my dad is in Florida now. We've got Peretti, eventually, as superintendent, who was very well acquainted by being in a village and the benefit of the Bible school. And of course, so my dad's itinerant school stopped, and he thought his, you know, he thought that was the end. Well, after several years, and Peretti is now the superintendent. He wants to revive that school because it was so valuable. And so it became, it started up again with a new name, Village Bible Training Circuit, VBTC. And the teachers there, David and Debbie Wilson, and they're on one of their recorders. They started that, and they would take my dad's materials that he had developed, and they brought them into the computer age, digitized, and And then they could use, instead of my dad starting out, had flannel graphs in the villages to illustrate his...
And old, then, like those old flannel boards we had in the elementary school?
Yeah. Oh, and that goes back to Jen Nelson. That churches would send old flannel graphs, and she would take pieces and parts and develop, you know, for the stories, whatever curriculum we were teaching. Well, anyway, so my dad started that way, and I even have in the files some old This Queen. My mother now was kind of the illustrator, and she would illustrate these Bibles on This Queen, and then it went to overhead projector, real.
Right.
And my dad had a portable one he carried along with him.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. And anyway, so they did that. But then now David and Debbie Wilson took all that and got it onto the computer and PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. And so now it's a new generation of this traveling school. And I think, I'm not sure the exact, but about 13 years, David and Debbie Wilson, Henry and Young Ryber, and Arliss and B. Roberts, they had three traveling teachers.
Wow.
I mean, so going to right around. Now, and the resident school operated for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And when my dad had to be forced retired at 70 from Florida, came back to Alaska, and was another 5 years at the resident school.
Uh-huh. And that was in Anchorage?
And that was in Anchorage. And so that was called Far North Bible College.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, and so years pass, and anyway, they finally dissolved that school, you know, because there you're bringing in, that wasn't my dad's vision, that was somebody else's, but, you know, he's, of course, cooperated. They've had some wonderful students from there. Another Eskimo, became an ordained pastor of the Assemblies of God, was Greg Tagarook from Wainwright. Greg and Dorcas Tagarook. Many years, faithful people that I would see at the conventions, because I would accompany my dad. And then after my mother passed away, you know, I would accompany him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it was really fun, even to go to what they call a general council in the States, where all of the, you know, the representatives come together. And because my dad had taught at all of these colleges around the country, Dr. Glandon. So that was fun. So they thought I was his wife. And so we thought, well, maybe that's a... They don't think that I'm 80, I hope. More that he's in his 60s. Yeah, and he always did look younger.
So when they were traveling around on their circuit, I'm assuming that when they went to villages, they stayed with the pastor of the town to also help out with that. How did they decide to maybe select a new town and perhaps start a church in a new town?
Well, see, he didn't start the churches. He would go where there was already an established one.
But do you know how the Assemblies of God would have established churches in various communities?
I think sometimes somebody just felt a burden to the original ones.
Yeah.
Like the Capeners. But yeah, he would go by invitation.
Right. And then, so you said, you know, you've mentioned two people that became ordained. Was there more people who...
Yes, there are, but I've kind of lost track.
Right.
You know, he passed away now 8 years ago.
Wow.
And my dad, and so... I'm out of the loop.
what I'm getting at is his vision of was very successful in bringing Native people into being ordained in the church in their own communities.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, you know, we'd have to talk to somebody who's up to to date with.
Right.
But, yes, so there's some strong Christians in these villages.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And... Now, this is up to date. This last Sunday at our church here in Fairbanks, we had a guest speaker.
Mm-hmm.
He's with a ministry called This Generation Ministry, I think. TGM. And he says they travel on the Yukon, and they have developed a camp there for the last 8 years. And in the story, you know, telling, he told about being in some village. I don't know if this is Yukon River or where. But a local was showing him around the village and then started walking up a hill. And they didn't talk right then. He just followed. Mm-hmm. And they got up and there was two graves. Mm. And then he said, this was my, and I can't remember who it was, mm-hmm. but I do remember the second one was my mother who committed suicide. Mm. And he quoted the statistics that Alaska has the number one per capita in the world of suicides. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and he said, this is what he said last Sunday. He said, you know, the state of Alaska, they realize the problem. They're doing, you know, what mm-hmm. they do. They're doing a wonderful job, you mm-hmm. know. But there's one element missing. mm-hmm. And that's what they're trying to mm-hmm. fulfill. And then they had a clip, a video clip of a girl, and she told also of several suicides in her family mm-hmm. and the alcoholism and all mm-hmm. that, the desperation. And she said that she had accepted Jesus as her Savior, and she had hope. Mm-hmm. You know, she had a new... Right. So mm-hmm. That's the bottom line and the motivation for these people coming, you know, because, mm-hmm. well, like I said, Don Nelson and mm-hmm. Difference, they mm-hmm. have their own story. And that's why they just want to share. Mm-hmm.
Brings and them their own personal salvation.
Right.
Yeah. Huh. So how did you come to do this entire corpus of interviews? Because it's a huge amount.
I mean, it's 59
interviews. 59
interviews. Yeah.
Oh, really?
You did? Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
I didn't know how many.
Well, 59 audio cassettes.
Yes,
but,
right.
But, you know, at least 30-some interviews.
Yes.
Know,
yeah.
Covering that, yeah.
Right. Well, my dad was always interested in history, mm-hmm. you know, and he kept really good records. And then I took that course in 99, Dr. Snyder mm-hmm. here at mm-hmm. Oral History. And so I kind of learned, and my dad... Since he's interested, mm-hmm. he bought me the professional quality.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then actually, in 1999, there was a state convention in Kenai. Mm-hmm. And so then I'd taken the class, I had the equipment, and so we were staying in a hotel in Kenai, but I would just grab different ones while they were all mm-hmm. gathered together. So I got as many as I could then. Mm-hmm. And then others that I wanted or knew... I don't know. I just wanted it because I don't know whether you told that or Dr. Snyder, but he said sometimes people come into the oral history and my grandparents were here back in such and uh-huh. such, and you actually find something once in a while.
Yeah.
And then the family's so thrilled.
Right.
So I thought that would be great, you know.
Mm-hmm.
These, and they're separated from their families,
you know. Yeah.
And so maybe someday a grandchild will want to hear their story.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they could tell. And you know, so either their family might be interested in them personally, or maybe somebody that wants to hear tidbits about a village at that time period. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's why I did it. And then to get my dad's story, because all this interweaving.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, inviting the Paredes, and then they came.
Uh-huh.
And another time, he was at a school in New York, a small Bible school, at a chapel service.
Mm-hmm.
And Donadio, Pat Donadio, was a student at the school, and it was at that time that he felt a call to Alaska,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's written a book. So I didn't interview him, but he's written a book, mm-hmm. Touch Me If You Dare. He was a drug addict before mm-hmm. his life was changed.
Yeah.
Italian. Uh-huh. But he started the church in Eagle River. He started the church in Kenai. And then he went on, and I think he started out in Tok, you know. So they start mm-hmm. small, and mm-hmm. then he ended up in Springfield, Missouri, which is our headquarters. And, mm-hmm. But he has passed away, too. But he wrote a book. Mm-hmm. So those that wrote books, I may or may not have interviewed them.
Right, right. But these other stories haven't been told and written down, so what a wonderful collection.
Right,
I think it'd be excellent just for the history of the Assemblies of God in Alaska, how it was established and how it went through in those mm-hmm. particular years. I think it's a fabulous
great.
Collection.
Oh, well, I've got to tell this part.
Yes. Uh-huh.
This, since you mentioned the very first.
Yes.
The very first Assemblies of God missionaries in Alaska came in 1917 to the Southeastern. Their mm-hmm. names were Charles and Florence Personius from uh-huh. Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, they're in June. at the time I'm going to tell, they're in Juneau. And there was a lady in their, I don't know if it was in their church or if she became a Christian at their church. Her name was Johnson. Lyle was her husband, and her name, I can't remember. But anyway, she got the burden to have, to invite children that needed a home to come. Mm-hmm. She just had one daughter, Jeannie. And the very first child, who was, I guess she was really more getting close to her teen years, was Lillian, who became Capener, who became the missionary, her husband on the Arctic, and ended up in, I think she was over 30 years on St. Paul Island.
Wow.
So see, they were in Barrow, our first year in Barrow, and then, so I got to know her really well. And then I went to St. Paul to do her interviews.
Right.
And she's such a talker, and it was hard.
Is that the lady who had 9 tapes?
Yes.
Or not, yes.
I saw that yesterday, and I thought, did we make a typing error? No,
no.
We didn't.
But, very interesting
wonderful.
Lady. She's, okay, so, and her life was changed because of the influence, you know, going to the Johnson's home. And then going to the church where the Personiuses were. Mm-hmm. Okay, now the rest of this, there was their second family that came into the children's home was Eddie Hughes and his brothers and sisters. His mother was blind and alcoholic, and he was the oldest of all these children. I think they were Aleut Russian. And then when his family was put into this home, his life changed. He married the daughter of the Johnson's daughter.
Right.
And became a pastor. And I think they pastored in Petersburg. Then they went out to the States, pastored in California. They eventually came back to Fairbanks First Assembly, and they were our pastors for 13 years.
Oh, my gosh.
So we got very, very well acquainted.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that, so that that ties back to the
the beginnings.
Wow. And, so.
Fascinating.
Well, now, so after you and your husband got married, did you stay here in Fairbanks, or did you go outside?
Oh, yes. We've stayed here the whole time.
Oh, really?
Vietnam War's coming on. And I was ahead. His family drove to Alaska in 1947 over the highway. His dad was with FAA eventually, and they traveled to the remote village. They lived in Cordova, Bettles, Talkeetna, and... now where am I going? Okay.
Your husband.
So we got married. We were both still in college.
Right.
But because I was ahead of him, he took correspondence too, and being out, he got a year behind. So he was a year behind. Of course, I lost a year by transferring. But anyway, and now we couldn't afford, both of us, in school, and so he worked, and eventually joined the National Guard. And I figured that I could then, if I became a teacher, I could make more money first, and then finish putting him through.
Right.
So that's what happened.
Okay.
So I graduated University of Alaska Fairbanks 1966. Started teaching at Hunter. Hunter School for 3 years. Then our son was born, and that was the year Ted graduated. And he taught at Ryan the very first year it opened, 1969. And he taught in that same room for 27 years.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yep.
Wow.
8th grade science, Mr. Baker, room 10. So, yeah, that's been fun, too. He had a great time there. And
And then you opened up your bed and
then,
breakfast.
Yeah, and then, you know, scary. And yeah. See, I didn't really have a retirement then because I quit at 3 years.
Right.
And we had a daughter. And when both children were in school, I started substituting.
Mm. Right.
So that I could, we would wait for, you know, school to be out, and then it was worse because he had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go on construction jobs for that 3 months.
Right.
And so he helped with the roads, the new road to Nenana and the road all around. Anyway, so that's what we've done, and we've been here, and then active in the church the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had just graduated, then you were teaching at Hunter. You must have been here for the flood.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, actually, we had ordered a new car out of Detroit, so we flew to Portland. We were going to pick up that car and got a call from his dad saying, you better cancel that car. Fairbanks is flooding. And so we had 2 feet. We lived in a mobile home.
Oh my God.
In the baker's backyard. Uh-huh. And that was on Ravenwood near the airport. That's where we first lived. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, it was 2 feet.
Yeah.
Into our and our church on Airport Way had it almost to the ceiling of the basement. And we had just gotten a new pastor, and that was the Browns, and so they're on there, and they kind of tell about their coming to Fairbanks in the flood. One other thing is the earthquake, which we're celebrating 50 years, you know, that Don Nelson, when Ted and I were dating. And he would be overseeing the Wilsons, and we were, I was in this little trailer next door with my sister. And Don would try to give us a bad time. He'd say, Ted, your car was there last night when I left, and it was there in the morning. You know, like insinuating he had, well, he had gone home. But anyway, on this day, this Good Friday in March, 64, the trailer was shaking. And we thought it was Don Nelson giving us a hard time.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the earthquake. That was the earthquake. That's our earthquake experience
here. Right. Yeah. Well, there's a series of anniversaries that are coming up for the university for 100 years. 100 years since the first cornerstone. And so anytime we meet someone who's been here, we just like to ask them, what are your memories of going to UAF? And how was your experience here?
Yes, it was very good, too.
Yeah.
As I approached the library today, I was remembering 50 years ago, you know, or it was a little bit more than 50 years ago, 51, going to the old library over there and holding hands under the table. Or I worked in the cafeteria. And made sack lunches for the students. And at the time, I didn't have an engagement ring, but I had my husband's class ring, which was way too big. And one day, I lost it in a lunch. But we did discover it in time to go back through all the bags and found it.
Oh, my God.
Actually, one of our first really official dates, or our very first one, was at it's now Joann Fabrics, but it was a grocery store, Piggly Wiggly or something.
Yeah.
And in the basement, I think, was a bowling alley.
Ah.
I think that was our very first date, besides, you know, at church occasions. But then our first real official date, there was a banquet or something, maybe for the workers at the cafeteria, I don't know. But anyway, I got a corsage, and we won the door prize going in, and it was a scale. And we had it for years. I'm sorry I didn't keep it. Bathroom scale. You know.
Do you remember any notable professors or teachers that you had when you were here?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I don't know if it was at that time, but Dr. Scarland was one of my teachers. He's one of the old-timers. Elaine Jacobson, that might have been later, but she was excellent.
What did she teach? Was that home economics?
No. She was in the sciences of some kind. And, one of Ted's favorite teachers from Lathrop, And then I took her a class, audiovisual, here, Williams. Jane Williams.
Oh, yes.
And they were there because we eventually built on Goldmine Trail off of Gilmore. So that's where we live today.
Oh.
In 75, 76, we built our house there. And Jane Williams was just up. And Red Williams
and
was.
Red,
He was my English teacher in Lathrop.
Oh, really?
And that wasn't his subject, his field, but. I guess our social life was in the church more than at the university, since we didn't live on campus.
Right, right.
But another person that was a student here, two students, Anna Lee Cousart. Okay, her grandparents were the ones that went to Alaska first, Assemblies of God.
Okay.
Her parents, the Cousarts, also became lifelong missionary pastors. And then Anna Lee graduated here, and she met her, I believe it was here, she met her husband here, Bob Conti. And they've also been in the ministry in the States. And Anna Lee, I think I told you, or maybe Rose from the book department, Anna Lee last year wrote a book about, it is a fiction book, but I'm sure it's based on a lot of her grandparents' experiences in the Southeastern. It's set in the South. East, and she's working on a second one. It's going to be a trilogy. And it was in some university publication. But, so anyway, her parents, and they're I interviewed them. I took a special trip to Washington to interview them. Well, I hope I've remembered everybody I'm supposed to.
Or I don't want your parking meter to run out either, Liz.
It's worth it. I'll pay the fee.
No. But this has been wonderful.
Thank you.
It's a wonderful context for someone in years to come to sit down to use the collection to understand how interconnected everything truly was.
Yes.
And is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And generational connections, which is really, really interesting.
Oh, well, thank you. I just so appreciate you taking it on and doing it.
Well, it's all been digitized.
Wow.
And we can take you downstairs and show you all the gold CDs if you like.
Oh, love to.
I think Joanne still has them in the back.
Oh, yes.
And as soon as we get your letter of transmittal, she can finish doing the series record and can put everything up.
Wonderful.
So thank you.
Oh, that would be great.
Okay.
And I actually, the last week of April, the district... The Alaska meeting is going to be here in Fairbanks.
Oh, really?
And so I thought maybe I could advertise.
Yes, you can.
Yes,
yes you can.
Absolutely.
Would you like them to come in and have a tour or anything?
We could do a presentation.
We could do a special presentation for you.
Oh, well, I don't know. I just thought maybe I could, at the church, I could set up a table with you know, and have my stack of books and have my pictures and of the missionaries. And I don't know if you want those at some point.
Probably would be very good to have photographs to go with each of the people, if possible.
Yes, I have.
It's just a wonderful context.
I have all of those.
Okay.
What did I do with my purse? I would like to take your picture if I can.
Oh, you sure can. And I'm going to turn the recorder off now, okay?
Thank you so much,
Thank you.
Robin and Leslie.
Okay. You've
Thank
been
you.